Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Thank you to everyone tuning in out there. I hope you're doing well. Today, we have a good friend back on the show, Daniel Frenlöf. We've been doing Norse News together with him. And we have a number of issues that we're going to discuss today. A lot of important stuff that's happening, both in Sweden, but also in America with free speech and everything else. There's just 100 things happening and unfolding in this war for the struggle, really, for our nations, for the survival of Western civilization and European man. So welcome, Daniel. Good to have you back again.
Yeah, thank you, Henrik. It's been way too long. It's nice to be finally back.
Absolutely, you bet. Well, let's talk a bit about Alex Jones first. I think that this is one of the important stories that have been unfolding here in the last couple of days, really. I think we're in day three now, if you will, in terms of the immense censorship that's happened against InfoWars and Alex Jones. He's been booted off of virtually every platform. He's not the first to have this happen to him, of course. We have sites such as Daily Stormer, especially after Charlottesville, that where they virtually were driven off the internet. I mean, they are back. They have domains that they can work on, but I do believe that they're still kind of skipping back and forth and between a number of different places. But what's your view on this in terms of, have you gotten any sense of what people in other parts like Sweden feel about this in terms of, like, you know, America has always been known for its free speech, right? The First Amendment, that it's protected in America. You can say whatever the hell you want. From my point of view, that's completely out of the window right now. What's your perception of this?
Well, here in Sweden, it's a bit different. In Sweden, you say, well, you should have the ability for free speech, but we actually had a small storm here in Sweden a few days ago with a Swedish state TV in a children's program said that, well, it's important to have free speech, but you can't be mean to anyone. If anyone gets sad, that is not covered in free speech. And I think many Swedes actually think that. Free speech is okay, it's nice, it's good, but if someone gets sad, well, then it should be actually illegal. That's a really weird thing, and I try to explain to people that free speech is important, in so many ways, but for me, the most important thing is, if I am wrong, I want to be able to know that. I want to have an open discussion if I'm wrong, because if someone is not able to speak up against me, for example, I will never know that I'm wrong. And again, we have a so-called democracy. And in a democracy, you have to be able to speak your mind, whatever it is. Of course, there should be some things that shouldn't be illegal. You shouldn't, you know, I couldn't hang you out as a pedophile, and I should, of course, get punished by that. But I think Swedes have a really other way to see, free speech than Americans. And sadly, in America, it's turning more the Sweden way.
Yeah, it definitely is, exactly. And of course, all of this goes under the frivolous, you know, it's hate speech. This was, you know, he's mean to transsexuals, or he's Islamophobic and stuff. And this is happening all over the West, where you basically, first of all, they don't really kind of prove to you what specifically was it, right? I know that's been this issue with Sandy Hook and stuff like that, and this has been tremendous pressure on Alex because of the Sandy Hook shooting. And he did a couple of shows where he had people on that didn't think they thought it was orchestrated, but he was the shows that I listened to. He was fair. He had a debate. He didn't know what the hell's going on. He's just listening to this guy. But you know, the media over in America here have claimed that his followers and supporters have been harassing the families of the Sandy Hook, victims and stuff like that. And this is one of the things that they've been pushing at. But you have to prove that he directly urged people to go and harass, you know, the families of the survivors. And as far as I know, that they haven't been able to do that. So there's so much. What I'm saying is there's so much that is just thrown out there in terms of defamation and making shit up. I mean, this is the essence of fake news. And now we've seen it being weaponized, where basically they're attacking free speech, attacking one of the biggest alternative news platforms that is out there. And this is how quick they did it. They all colluded, and they did it overnight, you know, in a couple of hours, basically.
Yeah, they are so powerful. I mean, you raised some really good points in your latest video where you talk about this, that the left now thinks, oh, these are our guys. We can decide, yeah, and we stop racism or bigotry or xenophobia or whatever. But what they don't get is they're next. They're next. These people just want all the power, and they want to decide that whatever you want to say or think, we have to say it's okay first. And if we don't, we're not going to allow you to speak. And as you say, also, we were seeing the left supporting these kind of totalitarian governments time and time again. And then when they take over, well, it's the left are the first to hang or to have their heads chopped off. And again, it's so, I mean, how can you not want free speech? This is a big thing for me. For me, it's almost to prove that we're right, Henrik. our ideas are so great and so true that they cannot be debated. They have to be made unlawful. Otherwise, people will hear what we're saying, you know, about naturalism and about how wrong multiculture is. And yes, so in one way, this is actually kind of proof that we're right.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're obviously afraid of the messages that we bring. And if Alex Jones included and other people that are censored are such immense kooks and nut jobs and just losers or whatever, then why would they even bother? Then it would be like, I even saw one article was like, no, don't ban Alex Jones because that feeds into his delusional conspiracy theories that he's being banned and censored. You know, it's like, well, it's actually happening. He's actually being censored. He's being blocked. It's not a delusion. I mean, he's right about these kinds of things, right? So it's amazing that these people don't see that. It's like, where do you draw the line, right? I mean, they just say it's hate speech. This is hurting people's feelings or whatever. I mean, there's no violence involved. There's no encouragement to go out and be violent against someone. Everyone should be able to take words, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And quite the opposite. But then again, they do this. They claim that people like us, you know, the fascists, the Nazis, we want to hinder free speech. And in the name of free speech, they have to put us down. And in the name of democracy, you can't have people like us voting for things that they don't like. They always turn the tables on these kind of things. And they've done that for years and years and years. But again, I try to discuss with these kind of people from time to time, but they don't want to listen. They're so sure that whatever I say is so, you know, filled with Nazism and racism and hate that they can't even listen to me because then they might get infected by this. And we have an election coming up here in Sweden. And, you know, the Sweden Democrats, who are a pretty soft socialistic party that only says that let's have a little bit less immigration. People are willing to go there and throw rocks at them and you know, because they're so afraid that anyone will hear what they say. Again, because they're Nazis. And if you ask them, what's a Nazi? Well, a Nazi is someone who just wants to kill people for fun. And I think, Henrik, that they really believe this. They really think that people like you and me, we just want to kill people for fun because we're some kind of Hollywood demons.
It's true, yeah. They truly think that our business is to murder people and gas them and just mass lynch people and stuff like that. And I don't know how much clearer you can be that. I mean, I've always advocated that I think that the immense social upheaval that's happening as a consequence of multiculturalism is something that's leading to violence and to rape and to battle over resources and territories. And this is a bad thing because I don't want that violence. I want to have peace. I want to have good societies. I want to have friendly societies where people respect each other. And that's not what's happening here. That's not what this is turning into. So I've always had the feeling that we are coming, offering something which is going to lead to way more peace and prosperity. And you know, again, and that doesn't mean that you can't help other people in their countries or whatever. If people want to do that, that's fine. But it's like, that's not what we're bringing. But there's no way that these people are going to listen to us anymore. Their minds are made up. And so don't bother me with any of your facts, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. And again, democracy might work, might not work. But one of the legs it has to stand on is a free and open debate. Because if you only let a few people have their opinions, a few parties be able to speak, then it's not democracy in any way or form. And again, in Sweden, we've seen lots of big newspapers. They don't want to take in ads for some parties because, again, well, they're racist and yada, yada, whatever. And that is, well, undemocratic. I don't like to use that word. But again, if we have democracy, we have to let all the ideas get out there so we can debate them. And again, if we're so wrong, just debate us. It will be so easy to show us wrong. I would love to see that debate.
Yeah.
Someone prove me wrong. Multiculturalism is great. Mass immigration is great. Man, I would love that. I would love to be wrong in this, but I don't think I am.
Yeah, but also they control the mass media. They've had their dialogue out there for years. This is what's led to the societies that we have now. It's their point of view, their vision, their sense of the world. And of course, we're sitting here saying we don't think this is a good idea, and it's proving itself to be true what we're bringing. And so it's obvious that the criticism is appealing to people. It makes more sense to people. They're people who are out in the real world. They will identify what we're talking about, not what these politicians and media pundits and talking heads and these, you know, fake news journalists are talking about. They're delusional, and so the only way forward to them is to shut us down. It's to terminate our ability to communicate with people. And that was the greatest thing with the internet. It's been truly, in a sense, kind of a Wild West for some time. And we might be coming to an end on that front right now. We'll just have to see. But what's your sense of what's going to happen next? I think there's going to be mass protests and uprising against this. What do you think?
Yeah, I really hope so. But that's like a best case scenario. What happens if Red Dice just disappears? What happens if Svegot, my newspaper, just disappears? What happens? People might, you know, get angry for a few months, maybe. But then again, if we don't have the internet at all, imagine they just block all our internet access. We won't be able to get out there. I mean, what are we going to do? Are we going to call people? Are we going to print a newspaper? I mean, we're so used to the internet that the opposition is like 90% internet. It really scares me. And it kind of makes me surprised that they haven't done this before. How come this show is still on Red Ice? Isn't that a bit strange?
Yeah, but they're also, I mean, in this attempt to shut down InfoWars, they're also driving an immense audience to him. They're effectively saying, this is the forbidden stuff. And I mean, and it is true that you can, and he should work on, he should use that, obviously, to his advantage. I'm not saying he should be dishonest here. It's like, well, you know, just work with that. And it is true, when something becomes forbidden, people are going to be like, well, what is it that I'm not allowed to hear? And so I think the appeal in that and the sheer arrogance that they're doing this and trying to get people to just disappear in this way is going to backfire on them. I don't know how. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know about how much damage they'll be able to do in the process. But think about it this way, Donny. I mean, we're not going to go away and give up and walk away. This is an ideological, existential fight.
Yeah, yeah.
If we can't be online, which is, of course, ridiculous, we'll get to that moment in terms of the infrastructure that the internet is these days with the modern world. I mean, that's where the discussion takes place. But, I mean, we're not going to go away. That's my point. And we're going to fight in whatever way that we can, even if that, as you say, revolves around, like, I don't know, leaflet nationalism or something like that. Go to handing out, you know, letters back to printing papers. I don't know. But I mean, the infrastructure that the web is today in the modern world is essential for us to be able to partake in the democratic, if you will, process and share our views about certain things. So this would be effectively, to me, like someone comes up and says, you're not allowed to go onto the town square and communicate with people. That's what's happening here.
Yeah, and again, as you said in your very good video, how can it be that it's awful for a Christian bakery to say, well, we really don't want to make this cake for this homosexual wedding because that's against our faith. Is that okay? Take another bakery. That's awful. But for YouTube to shut down people who they just personally don't like, that is a-okay. I mean, the double standards are just amazing.
Yeah, they truly are. It is extraordinary. So we'll see what happens here next in terms of where Alex Jones goes with this. And also, it's going to be very interesting to see the next move by these big social media companies. There's been tremendous pressure already on, like, remove Molyneux and Lauren Southern and Gavin McInnes, kind of like the tier two after, you know, Alex, if you will, attacks on taking them offline. And I think, to be honest, yes, it would be very damaging, but the faster and the harder and the more the establishment strikes back at this time, the bigger the reaction will be. So I'm almost tempted to say, bring it on, just do it, you know, ban everyone, throw everyone off the internet, and then let's see what happens. The mass audience, the mass resistance to that, something I kind of want to see, actually.
Yeah, I really hope you're right. I don't want to blackpill you, but say they cancel all the shows on YouTube which they find hateful. I mean, what could that be, 5%, 10%? For them, they will still get their ad revenues. But as you say, we're fighting for our very existence here. We won't give up. The left kind of gives up, but the, you know, just a little resistance, they give up. So we'll figure a way to get our message out. I can promise you that.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, there's a lot of companies involved in this. And as I said, it was really a coordinated attack, which also kind of proves that they are in communication with each other behind the scenes. You know, they had some meetings. Someone decided, at this point, it's only basically Jack Dorsey of Twitter that made a statement today that said, like, well, you know, he hasn't done anything wrong yet, so we're not going to put, you know, get him off the platform. But that could change at any time. There could be any post at anything that'd be flagged and say, hey, this is hatred and whatever. But, you know, people out there must ask themselves and question as well that they can deem anything to be hatred or to be offensive or to be an attack on someone. I mean, anything. I mean, they can just throw out anything.
Yeah, because you never get an answer. I mean, I've been banned from SoundCloud and YouTube, and you know, just for the kicks, you just write, "Oh, sorry, what did I say?" And they never answer. I mean, why would they? It's their platform. They can deem whatever they want hateful or homophobic or transphobic or afrophobic or whatever phobic they want to win. There's no justice here. And the thing is, I think that people, like the normal people, they actually believe this. Oh my God, they were afrophobic or they were transphobic, that we set in the show saying you should kill all trans people. But that's not the truth. Again, we want just peace. We want peace and understanding and love. I don't want to sound like a hippie, but our way of life is way more peaceful than theirs. And again, hopefully, Henrik, they will bit their own tail here, I really hope, because people, I think it's getting to I mean, it's got so far now that even here in Sweden, we have some, well, maybe not leftists, but a few ordinary people who just, wait a minute. I mean, the Facebook censorship here in Sweden is just crazy. We have this group called Jag är här, I am here, who just have systemized just mass, what do you call it? They just focus on this guy. I mean, it could be whoever. Someone who talks,
they're targeting someone, harassing someone?
Yeah. And then he get like a thousand reports against him, and he just disappears, because I guess Facebook have like an automatic system. If enough people targets you, you will just disappear. And people are starting to react a little bit against this. And hopefully, I mean, I really wish Facebook would just disappear. It's gone to be such a weird monster of censorship.
Yeah,
I didn't think that would happen, but hopefully they will just go bankrupt really soon.
Yeah, I mean, they have so much money, though. I mean, even though the major stock crashed here just a week or so ago, yeah. I mean, it's still this is a drip in the bucket. I mean, they had even just this year, basically what they lost, which was dramatic to most people, is just what they had gained in the last like 2-3 months or something like that, I think. Yeah. So they're, you know, they just, it was a little bit of a correction. They fell back, but they're like right on track again. So it's nothing to them, and they have so much money, so much information, so much influence that there has to be legislation. There has to be someone that steps in from the political world and says, you know, these platforms, these unelected people have way too much influence on what goes and what doesn't go, what people can say. And I don't buy this argument that it's the free market, or these are private companies and they can do whatever they want. It's like, not anymore, because it's like at some point, as someone brought this up, and it was a good point. Someone said, well, you know, initially there were companies that were private companies that did the electricity. They did like vital services that we today kind of take for granted to live a modern lifestyle. And if someone at that point just would have said, well, I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to supply coal or electricity to this person because, you know, they're a racist or a bigot or something like that. I mean, we're not there yet. And I understand that we might end up in that category at some stage here. But if there's sanity brought into the picture, that's what's going to happen, where they say the internet and the access to it, the equal access to it, is essential for everyone. You know, so that, you know, at some stage, what I'm saying is legislation has to come into the picture, and people's freedom of expression has to be protected, don't you?
Yeah, I think it was Paul Watson who compared it to a telephone company. Imagine that your telephone company listening to all your calls, and then they said, well, we don't like what you're talking about. You talk about anti-feminist things. We're going to take your telephone away from you. Or even, as you said, electric companies. We don't like that you run your computer, which you play games that we don't like. So we're going to pull your electricity. I mean, internet is like water. It's a form of communication, of course. And you can't, I mean, I'm so sick of this. Well, it's a private company. Start your own. What do you mean, start your own internet? That's really, really hard to do.
No, it's not going to happen. And these companies, you know, some cases they did get help. In some cases they were at the right time, at the right place. And there was a lot of contenders. There was even some solutions that were better at the time. But, you know, for some reason, people liked one platform where it looked better, whatever the hell it was. The usability of it was a little bit better. So it became the favored one. But no, I think we're at a seminal point in history right here when it comes to censorship, when it comes to free speech, and how the liberal, and I call it, I repeat this all the time, but this is really what it is. It's the liberal world order. It's the new world order, but it's by these mega liberal, you know, lunatics, really, from the far left that are running the discourse right now. And so we've had, just to do a quick comparison, we've had some of these examples, as you said, in Sweden too. You guys have been kicked off. There's other, I think the research group, Granskning I Sverige, the examinations, they were kicked off YouTube. What was that? That's like months and months ago now.
Yeah, and we have the new party Alternative for Sweden got kicked, and then they came back. Then they got kicked out of YouTube. Then they came back. Then they got the YouTube channel erased. Then they get it back again. We have Motgift, who were removed. We have the Nordic Resistance Movement, who have all their shows now put in this weird quarantine mode where you can't search them, you can't comment on them. I was kicked out from SoundCloud. The Social Democrats made a movie about the... Sweden Democrats made a movie about the Social Democrats, about their Nazi past. It was removed from YouTube. It came back later, though. So we have a lot of these, but it's hard to know if it's YouTube or just a lot of reports that does this. But still, people are fighting against the free speech. That's the most important thing.
Yep, exactly. So big pushback that's going to come from this. And I think that they've overstepped their bounds. And I think that the reaction to this is just going to be too strong. So it's going to be very interesting to see how to move forward. But I hope Trump brings more attention to this issue. I think more politicians just around Europe overall will bring attention to this issue, because it's such a Stasi-like environment that we're in right now, where everything you say, everything you have ever said online is constantly being used against you and stuff like that. And I guess to a certain extent, it should be, like with Sarah Huang, the New York Times. You heard about that.
I actually wrote about it.
The amazing anti-white hatred expressed by this woman, and she's still backed up by the likes of the New York Times, who were attacking Alex Jones for being a hateful, bigoted individual, and he deserves to be taken offline. So the double standards are like mind-blowing in this case.
And I really support Sarah Young's, I think she should hate, if you want to hate white people, just do it. It's fine. Hate them. Let's have a debate about white people. Wouldn't that be interesting? White civilization against black civilization, white crimes against black crimes, that would be a great thing. But if she can hate white people, then I must be able to hate Asian people or gypsy people or black people or whatever people. I mean, it has to be the same across the board. And this is the thing. Hate against white people is never, ever a problem. I mean, the most absurd things people are writing, that's A-okay. And even people even like it. But if you say something about black people, well... then you're off the internet.
Yep, exactly. That's totally right. So I'm with you there. I think we should all respect each other, and we should respect each other's opinions and stuff like that. But I wouldn't be hurt. I mean, I'm not really hurt that she has these opinions. I just think she's a hateful individual, and she should have, there should be consequences in the world we live in, because as you say, if the shoe was on the other foot, there are consequences for those people. So I hate the double standard, and I hate all of these things. But ultimately, I think you should be able to discriminate against whoever you want. You can't legislate that you must love and like everybody. You can respect them, but you don't have to love and like these individuals. It's just what it is. So I opt for the true free solution in this case. Let her hate, but then if other people want to say the same about her or her group, then let them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bizarre thing. We're going to put a law that says you have to accept certain things. I mean, what? That's not even possible. Accepting is an internal feeling. Well, you can stop me from saying that I don't like... we have a pride parade here now in Sweden. It's crazy. You can't force me to accept it. You can force me not to say that I don't accept it. But does that really change anything? Won't that just make my fear and my hate against the pride parade, because I think it's disgusting, will that just disappear because you make it unlawful, or will it grow? And I can tell you the answer is it will grow even more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just right. It's almost that polarization process that's happening right now all over the West, all over Europe, in America. I just feel that there's no stopping it. It's just, for example, in the wake of Alex Jones, a lot of people were like pointing to other people on the opposite side, if you will, not really on the opposite side of the political spectrum, but in contrast to Alex Jones. They were talking about Louis Farrakhan, for example, right? And he hates, Jews and white people and stuff like that. So take him offline too. And I was like, no, don't do that. Like,
no.
It's better to let Alex Jones be online, and then all these other people can be online too. And that's just a solution to it. It's like, because now you're entering into the whole infrastructure of the internet will have to be evaluating and reevaluating, looking at everything, just the mass flagging. I mean, I know that these companies have a lot of money, but imagine how much time and salaries they are spending on monitoring, on tracking, on trying to figure out, of demoting and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's the consequence of the vastness of these companies. But they're entering into a path which is going to be, I think, unwinnable for them, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And I have one question, Henrik, because I don't know that much about Alex Jones. Do you have any theory about why now? Why not a year ago? Why not in a year? Has anything special happened right now?
Well, yeah, you have the midterm elections coming up. And so the whole thing has been, I mean, Trump, he went on the Alex Jones show. He said, you know, I hear great things about you and I won't let you down and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that it's all about Trump, but it's about the biggest kahuna that the establishment want to go after right now, and that's Trump. And so they realized that it was the alternative media that managed to pierce through the propaganda of the mainstream press. I mean, the whole establishment, mainstream press across the board, were hating on Trump, and the only one resisting it, basically, was the alternative press. And so they were in a position to effectively fight back, get Donald Trump elected, and this is what they are. They hate this. They're not going to allow it again. So they need full spectrum dominance of all information out there. And again, I think they're overstepping this boundary. I think this is just going to gain more sympathy for Alex Jones, for Trump, for conservatives, for right-wingers. And so I don't think that they understand truly what they're doing. They're thinking short-term, just get them out, kick them off. And they think that this is going to be the solution, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. And I really, really hope that Mr. Trump knows that it was the alternative or the free media that really helped him get into power. And hope he don't forget us. Now,
exactly, and that's a good point. I don't think he will, but you never know. It's a lot of things on his plate, but at some point it's going to be brought to his attention. But let's talk a bit about Sweden, Daniel, in terms of what's happening there right now. We've had, of course, as you said, we have a really important election coming up here in September. It's going to be I don't know if this is the make it or break it. Election for Sweden, but it's going to be very, very important. And we kind of have a nationalist struggle, if you will, a little bit. We've always had the Sweden Democrats. That's been the only party. It's been the only viable party. And I don't know how much, Alternative for Sweden is going to gain in this election, or how many are even dare, if you will, to jump ship from the Sweden Democrats and risking putting them on Alternative for Sweden and then effectively not getting all the support that the Sweden Democrat needs to get to actually be the biggest party in Sweden. So what's your analysis of what's going to happen here during the election?
Yeah, that's a big debate here among nationalists in Sweden, that should you vote for the Swedish Democrats, who are, again, more of a socialist party, who says that we want to stop immigration a little bit. They're getting softer and softer by the day, I'm sorry to say. Now they say that they want to accept homosexual adoptions, and they talk about climate. Well, maybe there's a man-made climate change, and Jimmy Åkesson, the party leader, actually said in an interview, a kids interview, but they say we have no repatriation. You say that in English? Repatriation?
Yeah.
Politics. We have no politics for sending people back again. And we have this new party called Alternative for Sweden, who's, well, their main question, their main, the thing that they went go to election on is send people back. People have to go home. They can't be here. They can't be in Sweden because they are not Swedes. And this is a really new party. But the polls, well, since they're so small, it's not easy to know. But I would say they're somewhere around 2 and 3%. And it's not impossible that they will get 4%. And then they will get into the Riksdag, the Swedish government. So the Social Democrats seems to be the biggest party, actually, which is amazing.
The Social or the Sweden Democrats? Which one did you say?
Oh, sorry, the Swedish Democrats.
Yeah, exactly.
Might be the biggest party in Sweden, actually. Depending on who you listen to, they're around 23, 24, 25%. And the Social Democrats, who had a rule here in Sweden for almost 100 years, they're just failing on everything. Their party leader, Stefan Löfven, our prime minister right now, he doesn't care anymore. Everything is failing. And we had, disaster after disaster here in Sweden, the latest one being these immense forest fires. We really proved that he's not a leader at all. So I think the election will be good for Sweden, whatever happens. And we really just hope that the Sweden Democrats will get a bit tougher when they get into power. That's what we're all hoping for. So the best thing would be that if the Swedish Democrats will be the biggest party, and that Alternative for Sweden will get into the Riksdag in Sweden. That would be really interesting, because then you have a small party with a more so-called extreme politics, not extreme at all. They want just people to go home. They can push the Swedish Democrats a little bit.
Exactly.
But then again, Henrik, I'm sure we won't vote our way out of this mess because Sweden is failing on all parts. And the politics, yeah. The politicians, they can't do anything. They can't do what's needed.
And the forest fires, which we're showing some footage of here as we're talking, really demonstrated this. It demonstrated our inability to act in a crisis. And of course, it had been some of the largest fires and most extensive since the, I guess, 100 years back or even more. Yeah. They don't even have a recollection of when this was happening last time. And they were so immense, of course, that they couldn't stop it. They didn't know what to do. They, of course, at the same time, you have this idiotic Swedish system where we call it industrisemester, which is industrial vacation. Like all of July, Sweden shuts down. It's not as bad as it used to be. But it's like, you know, everyone went on vacation. That was it. There's no personnel anywhere. And of course, that's when all of this really happened and bloomed out. And so this has exposed our inability to handle a crisis. And we've had to call on other European countries. We've had to call for the European Union to support coming with these big planes that can, of course, load up like a lot of water at one go and dump it on these fires. But has it simmered down? Is it still going? What's happening on this front?
Well, it's still burning, but it's under control now. It's not spreading like wildfire. But you said planes there. We had a minister said, well, Sweden can't have their own firefighting planes because that's too expensive. They cost 50 million crowns each. The cost of immigration in Sweden is 100 million kroner each day. We could buy two planes a day. The cost of the mass immigration. Yeah. And I mean, this is just bizarre where we chose to put our money. And again, this is, I'm really sad for people who lost their homes. Nobody died in the fire, which is really good. But again, this was a big strike against the Social Democrats because they once again show that their system isn't working anymore. We don't have the resources to both support this massive immigration and, I mean, something as basic as being able to fight our own fires. I mean, we had a history. This summer has been the driest and with the least rain for many hundred years. But still, we should be able to. I mean, we should have resources for this. Of course, Sweden is still a rich country. There's a lot of money. We're just putting the resources in the wrong pockets.
Well, this is what our former Prime Minister, Fredrik Reinfeldt of the Moderate Party, the so-called conservatives, actually said. I mean, he issued this warning way back in, I think it was 2014 or something like that, where basically there is no more money. That's it. Like you all the services, everything is going to be just falling behind because we need to open our hearts and let everyone in from other parts of the world. You know, and that was it. And he was right. Yeah. That's what they've done. Yeah. And the Social Democratic Party, which took over after that, have followed suit on this. Everyone has followed suit on this. And now, of course, it exposes this idea that they can pour hundreds of millions into gender studies and research. the most ridiculous stuff about like some trans issue or something, but they cannot allocate the funds to make sure that we can put out the fires. I mean, it's insanity. These people are crazy. They're nuts. And they don't care if the country burns down. Maybe they want it to burn down. I almost see this attack on like our nature, the geography, our land. That's the most vital thing that we have as a psychological attack almost, you know?
Yeah, you never know. And again, we have Pride times here in Sweden. And during these forest fires, who went to the Pride parade? Well, a bunch of Swedish firefighters with their fire trucks. That was more important than fighting fires. And I mean,
And the military and everything else.
And the military and our chief of staff. And, you know, everyone was there dancing and singing with the dildos and the children and the people dressed out as dogs. And this is just a flood. And I mean, I know you're from Gothenburg. Remember the Gothenburg party, Göteborgskalaset?
Sure, yeah.
Then I bunched that together with West Pride. You can get some dildos with your langos. Just taking over here in Sweden.
That is amazing. There was, of course, one of the things which happened is that they called on other European nations to step up to the plate and help. And one of these was Poland. And there was huge, caravans, really, of Polish fire trucks and personnel and different vehicles and equipment that was rushed through to different parts of Sweden, through central Sweden all the way up to some of the northern parts, too. Yeah. And it was a big event in Sweden. I mean, we were getting a lot of support. People who were out, they were clapping their hands and showing their gratitude for these very kind Polish people. that were there to basically do the job for us. But there was also a a diplomatic crisis in the backdrop of this. Daniel, tell us about this.
Yeah, it was Morgan Johansson, our Minister of Interior Affairs, I guess you would say, who when there was a big march in Poland, said, well, this march is full of Nazis with strong anti-Semitic tendencies. We have to put a stop to this. And I mean, that's almost, well, it's not a declaration of war, but what does he mean with that? Should Sweden put a stop to Polish citizen marching? I mean, it's just crazy. And this is a great thing. I mean, this is a great, I don't want to call it propaganda victory, but Swedes just loved Poland. And this had nothing to do with the EU. I want to make that clear. We had, I don't remember his name, but a Polish minister who said, this has nothing to do with the EU. We want to help. We want to help our brother countries.
Yeah.
We don't like what your politicians are doing with your country, but want to help the Swedish people. I mean, that's just beautiful.
Exactly, that's right. That's what they said. They said, you know, we don't care about your politicians, and they can attack us as much as they want. We're not doing that. We're not doing this for you guys. We're doing it for the Swedish people. And so, I love that kind of that true, genuine help that comes from our European brothers and sisters in this way. And it was. Yeah, it's beautiful to see, and that's what it's all about. You know, in those moments of crises, and you know, it can show that nation can help each other out. It means that nationalism, because it's strong, it doesn't mean that we have to fight and kill each other. That's a straw man that our enemies propose, right? This shows the true. What I'm saying also is that Poland has effectively become a more functional country than Sweden has.
Sweden in short time.
Exactly. And Sweden has been known worldwide for its welfare system, for its support of the elderly, for the school, for like all these services and things. And now that's just been like pissed away. It's gone down the drain. And we have to call for outside help. I know that the circumstances are quite, you know, unique in this case. But still, I think 20 years ago, Daniel, we would be able to settle this ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, as you said, this is nationalism. And this shows that EU isn't working, because I guess the thought of EU is that we should have like a big pool of planes and firefighting equipment, and then all this goes to the country where it's burning. But now we have a heat wave all over Europe. It's burning everywhere. It's burning in Greece, it's burning in Sweden, it burns in Italy and in Spain. And we don't have resources to fight all this. And we have some Italian planes here in Sweden, but they had to leave because they had to fight fires in Italy. I mean, this shows each country must be able to provide for itself. And then we can help each other when we need it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I heard some Lars Bern, another very good, I guess he's a professor, talking about this too, the crisis management, how this has gone out the window, and how, you know, they have, they're not helping farmers anymore in Sweden. They're not, they don't have any like food resources and backup and stuff like that. And he was talking about, you know, this is just a wildfire. There's other things that could happen that could lead to the, maybe not the collapse of the food production, but you know, it's a very short growing season in Sweden anyway. We're teetering on the edge really of if something big happens. He proposed, I think, what if a volcanic eruption happened? Like it happens regularly. It could set off so much smoke and soot into the atmosphere that, you know, it will yield a crappy growing season, basically, right? Sweden would effectively starve to death. And all the other countries, of course, too, they wouldn't be able to help us because they would have to just take care of their own people at that stage. So we used to have, you know, warehouses and shelters and preparedness with food. We had strong military. We had all these things in place. And it's all been pissed away. Sorry, but it's been pissed away on migration and helping everyone else around the world.
Because, you know, nothing can happen. And actually, where I live in Lerum, a few miles outside of Gothenburg, we have a water shortage now. We still have water coming out, but you can't use it for anything else than hygiene or water. And my neighbor came in a few days ago because we have our own well, and he said, hey, Daniel, can I have some water? Because I need to water my plants. And suddenly water is always free. But suddenly you kind of realize how important water is. And I mean, it just takes one hot summer. And then a city outside of Gothenburg have a water shortage. I mean, what if something really happens? What if the water supply got poisoned? I mean, Sweden is just an open wound. And we have a lot of terrorists here in Sweden just waiting for something for it to happen. And as you said, we're just pissing this away. Because, I mean, the thought in Sweden is, well, nothing bad can ever happen. Nothing bad can ever happen again anymore. And it will, I'm sorry to say. I'm really worried about Sweden's future.
Yeah, me too. I mean, look at the preparedness issue, and if there's any other kinds of crisis, what's going to happen? I know this is Sweden. This was a news story that kind of got around a little bit, but it was like the Swedish government sent out these pamphlets, right? If the crisis arrives, and what, you know, all the things you have to do, and they talked about food and water and stuff. But this was like recommendations to last, I don't know, what, 72 hours or something like that. I mean, we're talking about things where the basic functions of society could be knocked out for, like, if not forever, for a very, very long time. You would have, you know, other groups effectively, you know, if law and order is collapsing, this is the big point. And this was Lars Band, the professor, mentioned. This is a good point. But he said, basically, the violence monopoly that the state has is losing its control. It's losing its grip. And that's really when you go from a society, a country, to just lawlessness. Like it's not a country anymore. If it can't protect its citizens and do the basic functions that the society was created to do, then what is it at the end of the day? Well, what is it? And we've seen this, Daniel, with like all these attacks on police stations. There's, you know, obviously we know about all the no-go zones and stuff like that, but there's been a ramp up in this kind of stuff. And the police is losing control. They cannot keep up with the demands. They cannot keep up with going to all the calls that they're getting and stuff like that. So we're losing the security, and we're losing the ability of letting the state and ultimately through the police to help us out in a crisis.
Yeah, we talk a lot about here in Sweden about anarcho-tyranny. I don't know if you have that, or anarcho-fascism. I mean, while the immigrants are burning cars and attacking police and attacking firemen, they're attacking firemen with rocks and attacking ambulances, we had a guy a few days ago who barbecued, and it's not allowed to barbecue now, and the cops were there in like 2 minutes and gave him a hefty, hefty, hefty fine. Because some part, the Swedes, you can always, you know, you can always hunt down the Swedes. If it's, you know, for hate speech or whatever, but you can't do anything about the kids in the suburbs just burning cars and attacking attacking cops all the time. It's just, I mean, it's just, it's obvious who they chose to attack, and it's the Swedes, the people who are paying their taxes. And these 72 hours you talked about, I looked into that, and I mean, 72 is just a random number they took. 72 hours, nothing will happen after 72 hours. They've done calculations about this, and all the resources, the emergency resources, will support a small part of Stockholm, the biggest city in Sweden, for a few days. And that's all of Sweden's resources. And again, we have this, you know, these modern crops who can't take the seat. Old crops still, a few people here, you know, a few more like hippie farmers, they have the old crops that their ancestors used, and they're fine in the seat because they have big roots, and they're not as you know, you don't get as much food from them. But then again, they can take this kind of heat. They don't need rain every day. They don't need you know, chemicals to grow. They're just fine. And the whole of Sweden is just, it has to be perfect all the time. And if something doesn't work, then nothing works. No water, no police, no military, no water, no food, no nothing. We have to realize that things will get worse, and we have to adapt to this.
Yeah, exactly. And people are just completely, I don't think that they're in a position where they can imagine that something like this would happen. It would be I think the biggest shock for people would be the psychological shock of like, well, what do we do now? Where, as you say, the water runs out, the food is not there. I mean, it would be a mass starvation crisis. And I mean, it sounds like hyper alarmist and stuff like that, but this is reality. We, you know, as you said, we've built everything up to where we had it so functioning that the dependency on it has been like complete, right? The state controls everything, and which this is, of course, the downside of that system also, because if and when it collapses, no one knows how to do anything. They can't take care of themselves. They will effectively starve because no one will come around and help them out and save them. So this is a disaster waiting to happen. And again, with these huge immigrant cliques and Muslim factions now and stuff like that, I mean, it would just turn into like a bloodbath pretty early on in the process, I think, if law and order collapses and all these different factions that would fight for resources start. Imagine just robbing of people and trying to, you know, loot their houses to try to find food and stuff like that. Who has the weapons? Who has the hand grenades? Who is accustomed to being in a war-type scenario? I mean, it's...
It's not the Swedes, not Swedes. And I mean, you who listens now, I mean, the least you can do is have a few hundred liters of clean water at home. It costs like nothing. And without, you can live months without food. But if you don't have any water, within a few days, it will be panic. You won't be able to function. Just have some water at home, at least if you do nothing else, please.
Absolutely. Well, Daniel, let's take just a short break right here. I want to continue with you shortly and talk more about there's some burqa bans in Denmark. Pretty interesting. There's even a French Algerian millionaire who claims he's going to pay the fine for all the ones, all the women, I guess, who wears the burqa and just kind of defies the law and stuff like that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the election too, what you think is going to happen there. But why don't you give us some of the details, Daniel, both about the Free Sweden, the organization you're part of, and also Svegut, which is the relatively new started paper that you guys are working on.
The Free Sweden is an organization for ethnic Swedes. Well, more or less, everyone is welcome, but you have to support the idea that the Sweden is a country that belongs to the Swedes, that nuclear family is the most important part of this. And we're gathering people to, well, you know, just getting to people to meet and showing that there is a voice who also speaks for the ethnic Swedes. And this used to be called the government, but they don't do this anymore, so we have to do something about this. And we actually recently had a first big event or a summer party, and man, Henrik, I wish you would be there. It was just amazing. So many happy children and families and puppies running around. It was like paradise, and everyone who was there, I think they actually felt free for a few hours. And we're fighting for this as much as we can. We're working really, really hard, and we're also hoping to buy the first Sweden house soon, which will be like a hub where people will be able to you know, get together, have a cup of coffee, or do their projects, or you know, write articles, or do podcasts, or whatever. And you can just, if you're Swedish, which, well, you don't have to be Swedes, but I don't think otherwise you will be interested, just enter into detfriasverige.se and apply for a membership.
I'll definitely have the link up for that, so everyone from Sweden should check it out. If you're not aware of it already, of course, which I think most are, but if you're not, it's really good, you know, organizations doing a lot of good work, and I'm excited about where this could lead and the outcomes of this. And you know, again, taking the long-term view on this, as we've been talking about, since basic functions are collapsing and stuff, it's going to be more important than ever to have a network and to have people that you can rely on. And get that sense of community, which we, to a certain extent, has lost in the old collectivized Sweden, believe it or not.
Yeah. And so, sadly, I mean, we can't vote our way out of this, as I said before. And the plan is that around the Swedish house, we'll have families moving in so we can, you know, help each other, protect each other, work for each other. If there's a water shortage, we will have supplies of water. But most of all, I think security. But as you said, if society starts to collapse, who will help you? This is our pamphlet. It's in Swedish, but I can translate it. It's always good to have someone on your side. Who's on yours? That's the thing about the Free Sweden organization. We want to be able to put people on the same side, because we're so automatized now, and you know, people don't even have friends anymore, which is really sad. They just sit in their apartments and watch TV and think that's everything. And that might have worked before when Sweden were, you know, when it was going okay. But you have to let that go. We Swedes, we have to unite and fight for our cause.
Yeah, definitely. And then you have the magazine Svegut as well, of course, in Swedish, but a lot of good content for people there to keep up with the lot of the breaking news stories in Sweden. And of course, you guys have podcasts and videos and all kinds of stuff there as well. You have events coming up as well. And Lana is going to be part of one of those, by the way.
Yeah. A women meeting. She will be with us on Skype and talk about, I mean, many people look up to Lana, obviously, and, you know, want to ask her questions, and hopefully, I don't know what women talk about, but hopefully she will talk about, you know, how it is to be a woman in the nationalist struggle, and hopefully inspire people to see that women are the thing, isn't it? We're fighting for women. They're the most important.
And our families and our kids and you know, all of it. Yeah, exactly. It's we can't exclude. I know that there's a lot of resentment against women like Elin Ersson out there, for example, who was the one who was blocking the plane to take off. We did a video about that. We could talk more about that in the second segment. But I know that there's a lot of resentment and anger, and people feel that, you know, women are traitors and stuff like that. And although that's not completely untrue, that there's some legitimacy in, of course, that women are more prone to go for the emotional route, and thereby, you know, more prone to want to help others, and they're more prone to fall for the propaganda to a certain extent. Not everyone, but many are. But the answer is not to turn against our women, obviously. The answer is to show them the way and show them that there's a better way and not turn our back on them like they have ours. The, you know, if we do that, that there's not going to be any more kids around, and that would be the true disaster. So anyway,
then we all have to walk in the pride.
Yeah, exactly. I'll put dildos, you know, somewhere. But let's take a break, Donnie. We'll be right back with the second part of this interview and show here. News roundup, really, today. So stay with us. We'll be right back with much more. Jag har en bild utav mitt Sverige, i mitt sinne vackra Sverige, utan mångkultur. Jag har så länge väntat hopplöst på ett parti som vänder landet. Svenska folket först. Vindarna har vänt. Det vi väntat på har hänt. AFS. Vi är alternativ för Sverige. Och vi ska ta tillbaka vårt land. Vi är alternativ. Alternativ för Sverige. Svensken tiger inte mer. Alternativ för Sverige. För Sverige. Vi ser en lösning på problemen. Vi ska rensa landet och systemen. Resan börjar nu. Kör, kör. Jag ska så länge som jag lever försvara landet och vår heder. Som vi gjort förut. Vindarna har vänt. Det vi väntat på har hänt. AFS. Vi är alternativ för Sverige. Och vi ska ta tillbaka vårt land. Vi är alternativ. Alternativ för Sverige. Svensken tiger inte mer. Alternativ för Sverige. Vi ska rensa upp det politiska träsket. Vi kan, vi ska kämpa för Sverige. Gustav, 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 Gustav. För Sverige. Svensken tiger inte mer. Vi är alternativ för Sverige. Och vi ska ta tillbaka vårt land. Vi är alternativ. Alternativ för Sverige. Svensken tiger inte mer. Vi är alternativ för Sverige. Och vi ska ta tillbaka vårt land. Alternativ för Sverige. För Sverige. För Sverige. För Sverige. Alternativ för Sverige.